Welcome to the Connected Spirit Podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Dawson. I'm a working medium, spiritualist minister, certified spiritual life coach, and mentor. My goal is to help support today's modern mediums and spiritual seekers in making strong connections with their own spirit and spirit helpers. I will share all I know about mediumship development and spirituality. I invite you to join me on this journey. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the show. My next guest is a lifelong native of Southern Ontario, Canada. He holds diplomas in radio television broadcasting, as well as artistic management. He has been on a spiritual journey for almost a decade. And while he's honed his skills in media, as well as the entertainment business, he is pivoting towards becoming a full-time light worker. In 2021, he became certified in the practices of core shamanism, as well as Reiki, where he currently resides at level 2, planning to obtain his master's in the future. This stage of his journey is unique, as he has one foot in the 9-to-5 world and the other in the spiritual healing world. All this while hosting and producing the Unexplained Inc. podcast, which launched in March of 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic. After a lengthy hiatus, the show is returning with its season premiere on the evening of Friday, September 23rd. I am so excited to have Phil Warder, aka Phantom Phil, to the show. So nice to have you, Phil.
Well, thank you for having me, Courtney. This should be fun.
It should be fun. There's been a reverse of roles. So for people that are just tuning in, I've been on Unexplained Inc. podcast a couple of times. Had amazing time with you, and then the one episode we did with your brother, and it was so much fun. And I'm actually going to be coming back on your show in a few months. So it's nice to kind of be able to connect, but within a different way. So I have been waiting patiently for you to give the green light to come on and start sharing with the listeners about your journey, your spiritual journey, and specifically your work within shamanism. So just wondering if you could maybe like take us back about like 10 years ago where your spiritual journey started to really unfold and what that looked like.
The best place for me to start, Courtney, is September of 2013. My life looks very different back then compared to what it does now. And on the surface, it would look like I had a pristine, almost picture-perfect life, and there were a lot of good things about it, but the biggest thing being is that at the time, my marriage was beginning to crack, and it would only last about another 5 to 6 months. And during this period, and I also recognized the cracks coming and that transition about to come as well, and during this time, I went for my first ever Reiki session. And you know what's funny? Like Reiki and most other things I've dove into headfirst here in the spiritual realm, I don't remember how I got connected to it, at least consciously.
Interesting.
What I do remember, so I used to work a very stressful job late into the night with a commute. So I would get home from work during the week and everyone would be asleep. It would just be me. So I would go on my computer and I would watch various videos on YouTube to help relax and unwind and try and get a good night's sleep. And then one of these deep dives led me to energy healing and Reiki. And I thought, oh, that looks interesting. And then a couple of months later, an interest became a necessity. And when I went for my first ever appointments, I came out of it a changed person. I'd been holding on to so many resentments, grudges, heavy negative energies, you name it, mm-hmm. over various things that had happened in my 20s and early 30s. Like, I literally felt like I was born again.
And wow.
Instinctively, I knew things were never going to be the same. And after that, this is when things get really wild. And we could probably do a whole other show on this portion of my journey, but I'll keep it brief for today. I started having what I guess you and other workers in your field would call psychic premonitions in my sleep.
Okay.
These were not dreams. These were visions which a little ways down the road, sometimes the day after, would manifest in the physical realm. And it happened with such intensity at this point in time in late 2013 that I was kind of scared of it.
Yeah. I had
no idea what was going on. And I felt like I was being guided to something. And my first Reiki practitioner, when I got to know her on more of a personal level, and I was able to talk to her about these things, she provided a lot more guidance. And these premonitions, a lot of them I was having, it was either warning me about tense situations coming up, or it was leading me towards something. And long story short, they were puzzle pieces leading me to a transition to eventually go back to school, which you mentioned earlier was where I was studying to become, I don't really know what I was trying to become, but I had a vested interest in the music business, and okay, I found a specific targeted trade school to go there. And once again, I have to cut out a lot due to time, but that transition, even though I went through with it and I graduated with honors, it didn't take me to where I was hoping it would, but I ended up where I was supposed to be. And that, through a whole series of events, led me to the transition into becoming a light worker and a spiritual practitioner, where I'm just about at now.
So that's the short version of it. So, and I really just want to delve in deep into this. I'm just so curious about it. Like, so when you go through these experiences, Phil, and you're having these precognitive dreams, and they're manifesting into physical form, like, how did you cope with it? And did you have any like support or mentors? How did you work through that? Because I know I have a lot of listeners plus students that go through similar experiences, and it can be very challenging. It can cause a lot of fear, a lot of the fear because they don't know what the heck is going on. How did you manage through that? How did you cope through that?
Talking it over with my Reiki practitioner,
okay,
like I said. And when I moved out and then eventually got my own place, which is the place I'm still in, oddly enough, I had a little more time to explore this stuff. And quick question before I get into that, when you have students and other people reaching out to you, do you hear the phrase, I think I'm going crazy, or I feel like I'm going crazy? Yeah.
All the time.
So I had those similar feelings, because I was like, clearly something is going on that wasn't going on before. And so I had that. And then I was very active at my local library at that point in time. Like, I was constantly signing out books and CDs and whatnot at the time. And I just decided to look on the internet one day to look if there were books on this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I found a book on premonitions, and the author's name is unfortunately escaping me right now.
That's
but
okay.
He's a very well-known individual in that field, and that made me feel a lot better. And then, so this was going on roughly over a 2-year period. Like, it didn't just happen all at once and stop. But the most intense was those few months before my marriage came to an end, as if just to give me a heads up on what direction to go in next, kind of giving me nudges, I think. Yeah. But in the summer of 2015, I discovered podcasting for the very first time. A coworker of mine who used to do a lot of solo traveling, because around that period of time, 2014, 2015, I was brand new to the whole iPhone thing and podcasting as a whole. And he showed me how to download them on my phone without racking up data charges. And I was doing a lot of driving, traveling at the time. So I was like, I got to see what's for me.
Yeah.
And then I found a podcast which started in 2010 and is still going to the present day, and that is the Psychic Teachers podcast out of North Carolina. And not only was I so drawn to this show, it was one of the many shows I started subscribing to at the time, but I actually reached out to one of the hosts with those same questions, which I'm sure you get all the time. Yeah. And she provided a lot of concrete reasoning. That's Samantha Fay, who still hosts that podcast to this day. So it was a whole series of things from there. But my first Reiki practitioner, who also became a mindfulness instructor for me as well, for a brief period during this transition, like, she was probably my biggest support system from there, because in my day-to-day life, I had little to no one else to talk to about this stuff. And there may have been a friend or two at the time who could provide support as well, but it was just a mix of all those things and just learning to follow my own intuition.
It's really, it's like you venture into the deep unknown when you start going through your spiritual awakening, the spiritual journey, because there's so much that we experience that goes beyond the rational mind and what we've been conditioned to believe. And we go, what the hell's happening here? And like you had, mentioned that, you know, yeah, people think they're going crazy because you cannot rational things of the unseen with things of the physical world. And it's hard to bridge that gap between the two. And it really is important that we have people that we can talk to and have a support system. So I'm glad that you were able to have that in those early stages.
Yeah, a little bit anyway. And one thing I should add, sorry, before you continue, is that through a series of small synchronicities, I got connected to a lot of the books of Wayne Dyer in 2015. And ironically, I just started to get into him right around the time he passed away. But his books, even though I haven't read any of his work in quite some time, they just pulled the door open even wider. And then from there, I think that's when I knew I had to start connecting with more like-minded people and explore this even deeper.
Tell us a little bit about how your journey brought you to exploring shamanism, because now you're certified as a core shaman. If you want to tell us a little bit about how your journey took you to that point. And
So I talked about seeing these premonitions in my sleep earlier and how it played a part into leading me to going back into school for artist management for the music industry. And I had a whole lot of other personal reasons for doing this. And in order to get to the journey I was on to discover shamanism, I had to fall. And I had to fall fairly hard. Because we're guided to rise and fall sometimes when we think we're in control and we're absolutely not.
Yes.
And if you recognize, you see the silver lining in the future, hopefully. So my own fall, after I completed school, I had so this is like summer 2017. I had a job opportunity, pardon me, that looked like a sure thing, completely bottom out on me. And I didn't have a plan B to get my foot back into that industry. And then later that year, I got very ill. There were some emotional things I went through within that last year and a bit in that stretch of time. And I basically coped with it by overeating constantly whenever I could. And then it affected my sleep. It affected my blood pressure. It affected even my lungs. And by the end of that year, I was a total mess. And I had enough money left over to basically stand pat and stay at home for a while until I got my health in slightly better shape. And luckily, most of it went away. I pulled through. I still have the sleep apnea I got back then, but everything else is gone, thankfully. But through that period, for a couple of years, I went through kind of an aimless, rough transition, so to speak, where I was just trying to find work however I could, provide however I could, but I wasn't really connecting with anything. And I had a bit of an existential crisis of my own where I thought all these spiritual teachings I had and everything that led me to taking this path into the entertainment business was just a lie. And hey, maybe I really wasn't going crazy and I wasn't following things properly. So I was also into quite a bit of manifesting at the time. And a lot of things I thought I had manifested didn't come through for me. So I, on a deep level, I started to feel betrayed even. And I thought, okay, maybe this stuff is all a hoax and it really doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So I was reaching a low point, and my low point kind of reached its summit, if you will, when I found myself working in a pork processing plant inside of a giant cooler. And yeah, it was rough mentally, physically, even spiritually. I was making decent money, but that was like really the only upside of the whole thing. And try to remember the sequence of events here. So in March of 2019, after, you know, going through some rough patches for almost a couple of years there, I'm going to meet a friend for dinner closer to the greater Toronto area, because I'm about an hour and a half west of there. And I had some time to kill, and I wound up at an Indigo bookstore. And
okay,
if some of your international listeners don't know, Indigo is like Barnes & Noble, or it's the big book retailer we have here in our country. And I just started looking through some books, and I find this book by Dr. Jeffrey Nixa. And pardon my terrible memory, the exact title is escaping me right now. Okay. But I can tell you this book single-handedly changed my life. And what the book was about is that Dr. Nixa used to work, well, he used to work in law, and then he switched careers to being a chaplain at hospice. So he was basically consoling people who were crossing over or about to cross over in their families. And then from there, he found shamanism and became what is known as an urban shaman. So his past as a chaplain, he turned that into spiritual counseling. And then basically from there would just heal people in many different ways. I believe he's in the American North or Midwest around Indiana somewhere. Okay. And he has like his own cabin and does a lot of forest walks and sweat lodge ceremonies and different modes of shamanism. But he was doing it from an urban environment. And what he was doing was he was helping people get through the rough patches in their life and reconnecting them with their purpose and their passion, which is something I desperately needed at this point in my life. So once I read his book, I decided to seek out a shamanic practitioner because he gives resources for it in the book. And I thought, well, there's got to be one in my area. I would find one in the exact same city that I bought this book in.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Synchronicity or what?
Oh, completely. The whole list of events leading me to even that book was a big synchronicity, really.
So what was that first experience with shamanism like with that practitioner?
So the practitioner, just a quick note, they shut down their business in the summer of 2020, which they were running from their home.
Yeah.
I can't share any more details because even when this practitioner was in business, they wanted to remain as anonymous as possible.
Okay.
Which I find interesting because when you do this line of work, you have to be okay with putting your name and your face out there. And this person totally wasn't, which I found interesting. But so in, I think it was May of 2019, I was finally able to connect and go to their place. And I had a healing done. And I'll get into more details later, because I'm sure it'll come up in the discussion. But afterwards, I felt like a long lost fire within had been rekindled. And I had just so much more purpose and drive. And that was the first time I journeyed and I saw visions and heard auditory messages. Like, it was basically almost my official confirmation of being able to tap into the spirit realm.
Okay. Now we're going to delve in. What is core shamanism? Yeah. What is it?
Core shamanism, to put it in its simplest terms, is a series of studies compiled by an anthropologist named Dr. Michael Harner. I discovered Michael Harner listening. He has some drum tracks for shamanic journeying posted on YouTube.
Okay.
That I used to journey to. That's when I discovered who he was. Him and the author Sandra Ingerman, those two individuals are pretty much solely responsible for raising the awareness of shamanism in Western culture.
Okay.
So he's a very important figure. Harner, to the best of my knowledge, constructed core shamanism from his anthropological work, if I even said that correctly.
We know what you mean.
Yeah. And I believe the number fluctuates from the research I found, but I believe it was somewhere between 25 to 35 tribes around the globe who do practices of ancient shamanism. He molded those all together and made his own practice of core shamanism. Some people, and I'm going to talk about this on my own show later this season, some people in the anthropology field felt he wrongfully lifted some of these customs and practices from these tribes in order to profit from it. I don't know how I feel about that. I haven't done enough research. I will say, though, the teachings of core shamanism for me have done nothing but heal myself and the others around me and have connected me deeper to spirit and deeper to friends and allies in the spiritual realm. So regardless if that's the case or not, I can't say it's had a negative impact on me.
What are the core principles of core shamanism? Because my understanding, and again, I don't claim to be an expert on it, which is why I've got you on the show. I know that there's different modalities and different, I'll say, I don't need to use doctrines, but different aspects or different types of shamanism. So what really sets core shamanism apart? Like, what's the fundamentals surrounding it?
The biggest fundamental is known as shamanic journeying. The other modalities of core shamanism, you need to learn and master journeying in order to do all the rest. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. So tell us a little bit. I've heard the term, and I'm sure other my listeners have heard the term journeying. What does that look like? What does it entail? And what could one experience through that process or that experience?
Whenever I'm asked this question, I'll start by asking you a question, Courtney.
Yeah.
Have you ever practiced or done yoga nidra?
No.
Okay. Are you aware of what it is, or shall I explain?
No, I'm not.
No. Okay.
No.
Okay. So yoga nidra it's almost like yoga for the spirit or the soul. All you do is you basically lie in shavasana or any comfortable resting pose. And a practitioner will basically do a series of guided meditations while you're in this shavasana pose, and you get downloads and messages from spirit. I did two or three yoga nidra sessions with a local practitioner actually between the years of 2017 and 19. So I actually think that was a big part in getting me prepared for shamanic journeying actually. So shamanic journeying is very similar. It could be done individually or in a group. You can do it with a live person, or you can find an abundance of tracks on YouTube or Spotify. A couple of good places to start coming tracks are with Michael Harner or Sandra Ingerman, and one I personally love to use is from a shaman in Ireland by the name of Martin Duffy. He has a really good drum track as well. So when I say drum track, I'll explain it like this. So whoever is administering the journey, whether it's virtually or in person, they are using what is known as a sonic driver. And more often than not, the sonic driver is a drum, or it's a rattle, or it's a combination of the two.
Okay.
The most popular sonic driver is the drum. And you basically will have a beat kind of like this.
Yeah.
At that tempo. And what it does is it'll relax your mind and your body, and it will put you in a trance-like state, similar to yoga nidra.
Okay.
Yoga nidra, you just kind of accept what is meant to come in for you, whether it's auditory or visual. But with shamanic journeying, the intention is way more specific. And I don't know if we have time to get into all the differences, but there's three ethereal worlds you can travel to.
Okay.
And in most of my research, they compare it to the cosmology of a tree. So I'll use that example here. The lower world is like the roots. You travel underground and connect with your power animal with a specific question or two, and they will answer it for you, and they will show you.
Okay.
The middle world is like the middle body of the tree. And basically it's our world here in the 3D, but I'll go out on a limb and say it's almost like an alternate dimension.
Okay.
Of this world. Okay. It doesn't get used until much more advanced practices later on. It's not a place for beginners. And then you have the upper world, which will connect you to your highest guides, angels, spirits, and quite possibly your higher self. And it's like the leaves or the branches of the tree. And you travel up there to get big picture questions or healing, if you catch my drift there. So those are that's the base summary of the three worlds you can enter in and out of through the sonic driver of a drum. And so much more detail can be filled in there, but I think that's the best version to stick with for now.
Okay, so this sonic driver, essentially through that vibration, that tempo, it puts people into an altered state where then they can move into those different planes or dimensions or worlds. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Now I'm getting it. This is good. And then, so beginners would start with the underworld. And then now for beginners, are they able to go to that higher realm? For example, you use the analogy, the branches and the leaves, or is that something that they work up to?
No, you can access either the higher or the lower realm. It's just each one will have different intentions and different effects on you.
Makes sense.
One thing I want to point out, which I forgot, was when your mind's at ease and your higher self or your subconscious takes over and you wish to enter the lower world, you can do it through a number of things: a hole in the ground, a tree, even a fire, because you want to visualize places in nature. That's how this works. Like,
okay.
You can't be like, oh, I want to go in through the basement of an office building. Like, yeah, it's probably not going to work for you. You know what I mean? It's got to be in nature. And to access the upper realms, you want to climb up. So you could do it climbing a tree, climbing a ladder, taking an escalator even, like anything that'll get you to ascend. And then you want to visualize the lower world, anything that will get you to descend. And a cave would work really nicely for that as well. And you don't have to consciously choose. It'll come to you. Like automatically.
Okay. Because that's where I was wondering. So when we go into that altered state through this journeying process, I would think that the mind would still need to be in that passive state in order to be in that altered state, if that makes sense. Because if your mind is still active, then your human is very much controlling the experience and not allowing these other individuals, whether it be spirit animals, angels, guides, ancestors, etc., to communicate with you. So it's very similar in that respect to mediumship.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Oh, this is so juicy. I'm so glad I got you on here. What's the difference between a shaman and then a medicine man? So my mother is, she is very much connected to her ancestral roots, which is First Nations. So I am First Nations. My mom's very much connected to it. So I do have some understanding of, you know, medicine woman, medicine man. Is there, can you maybe talk a little bit about like what the similarities and or differences are between the two?
Certainly. And this is something I maybe should have started off with a little bit earlier. So I appreciate the way you've asked this question. Anyone like myself and my teacher and her teacher, anybody who is taking Michael Harner's Core Shamanism class or is teaching it, has to refer themselves as a shamanic practitioner. Okay. Because an actual shaman is, to my knowledge, now there's a chance I may not have this completely correct, but to my knowledge, to refer to yourself as a shaman, you have to be directly connected by blood to one of the older tribes or be a specific medicine man or woman or a specific healer.
Okay.
Like those who haven't, how should I say this? Those who haven't inherited the practice from an outside source, say like Michael Harner, they technically shouldn't be calling themselves shamans, but the term shamanic practitioner is more correct. And to me, and I'm still in the early stages of my journey with this, remember?
Yes, so, yeah.
To my knowledge, that is the main difference between the two.
So one is connected to the ancient tribes. And when you're referring to the ancient tribes, is that First Nations tribes or North American tribes?
It is.
Okay.
It is, but it is not exclusive to North American tribes because the term shaman is actually Siberian. And there are literally shamanic tribes all over the world stretching to South America and even Norway, parts of Siberia, and maybe even Australia. So,
okay. Oh my goodness. You are a wealth of knowledge. We are delving deep because I remember watching a couple of paranormal shows, and I think it might've been Ghost Adventures or something, because I love that show. They had done an investigation and there was some shamans there, but they were actually that they had worked with, but these individuals were actually from South America. And I wasn't quite sure how that worked. Okay. I just watched the show. So it's interesting to see that there's different interpretations or different practices within that framework of shamanism. So I'm curious. I know that other forms of shamanism, they believe that shamans have this power to heal the sick and communicate with spirits and even help souls, you know, move from this physical life once they've experienced physical death to the afterlife. Is this the same with the core shamanism?
It is. Core shamanism is not to be taken in place of medical advice.
Yes.
Or any other matters. However, it can give you amazing insight as to how to solve what's bothering you or where to get help. And my own teacher has had to refer some clients to a psych ward, to a psychiatric hospital, because there was just nothing further she could do. And yeah, I can't remember where I was going with that. That was a great question, though.
So when people that are shaman practitioners, how does one activate or initiate that healing process for other people?
It's interesting because at this stage of my journey, I'm in the in-between stage of getting the certification and then opening a practice and actually doing the healing on people.
Okay.
The best I can describe is this from the healings I've had, because I've seen about, and this includes my current teacher, I've seen about, I think, three different shamanic practitioners, all different ages and different stages of their journey. What would typically happen was whoever you're doing the healing for, and we'll just use the one-on-one example for now for simplicity, because it could go into another different levels for the collective and groups and all that. But for one-on-one, like I mentioned with Jeff Nix's book earlier, you would do spiritual counseling one-on-one, get to know the person, get to know where they might be hurting, lagging, suffering. And the really intuitive practitioners, they'll pick up or they'll get nonverbal auditory messages even while the counseling's going on and give them more of a stronger idea. And it's similar to like a Reiki session where you can either lay the client down on the floor on a blanket or a mat or a massage table. And actually every practitioner I've had, I've laid out on a massage table. So it's pretty standard.
Yeah.
And basically they would guide you on a journey with a sonic driver, and then they would just go in and they would intuitively figure out what was wrong with you and what areas you needed to work on and which realms you needed to maybe go to. And then you would have your own visions as a recipient, and then you would get together and talk after the fact. And also some other things may happen. Can I share a quick story with you about
yes, please.
The first time I saw my current teacher? This was before I decided to take the courses. And this is February of 2021. I had just been coming out of a bit of a rough patch again with some things. And I was really burned out. I didn't realize it, but work and various other things and the podcast and just trying to do too much at once in my life, which is a major lesson I'm still learning, caught up to me. So I had a healing done, and I still don't know some of what was done with me. My teacher, outside of the core shamanic program, has had one-on-one teachings with an elder out of rural Arizona. And I don't even know what went into that, but a lot of power, a lot of powerful energy, I can tell you that. So after the table healing was done, I was just told, take my time getting up. So after a certain passage of time, I went to get up, and all of a sudden I found I couldn't move. And I was
wow,
what is going on here? So I tried moving again. Something was pressing down on my shoulders, preventing me movement. Preventing me from getting up from the table.
What was it?
Say, slow down.
Okay.
I don't know. There was nobody in the room. It was a spirit of some sort.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. So I took another additional, probably like 2 to 3 minutes before I got up. But already after this healing, I was starting to rush, and spirit said, no, you are going to lie here and take some breaths. But you know that feeling where someone's pushing down on your shoulders or yes, trying to prevent you from moving? I felt that. And my teacher had left at this point in time to give me a minute. There was no one else in the room.
And moments like that are so, they are transformative, because it goes from having faith in or believing or hoping to like knowing without a shadow of doubt, no question or doubt, that this is real. We can have experiences, mm-hmm, but when those that work with us, those that assist us or guide us from the other world or other worlds, when they can touch the world of matter, our earth, and you can physically fear it or feel it, it is a game changer. So how did that, moving forward, how did that experience really, you've got a lot of stuff that's changing and going on with you. Was that something that would be like kind of like the catalyst to be a complete game changer for you, Phil?
Yeah, I would say that was part of it. Another game changer. So I don't exactly remember when I decided to take the courses that were offered on weekends that I didn't have to take any time off work for. It was done in that very same basement, that very same room.
Okay.
Another game changer, and this kind of ties in, is that when I started taking the courses in spring of 2021, some of the most vivid, clear journeys I would have would be in that room, which I'm sure is no accident. And actually, sorry, one thing I forgot to mention earlier is that either before or after the spiritual counseling, you want to smudge your client or burn sage, whatever you want, whatever works for you.
Okay.
Get them grounded, because grounding is also very important to do before you do journeying, especially if you're new to it. So yeah, that's a very important piece of information. But throughout her, these courses in the early going, trying to think how I should sum this up, because there's a lot I could get into here, but I won't for time, and some of it's pretty personal. But like, in my journeys about a year before, between 2019 and 2021, I got very specific messages about certain places and certain people in the 3D. And I'll just say some of it manifested, and some of it is yet to be, but I'm getting more and more clues to when it's going to manifest. And I had some very vivid clues in the early courses I took. And okay, then certain things would manifest from these clues that I was not expecting, but have been a huge enhancement in my life. And that's when I said, okay, I was maybe had one foot in, one foot out before. Now I'm all in. Because if you're in the right headspace and the right energy level and you can ground yourself and calm down and tune in, I say doing journeying is almost like living in or playing a video game with a cheat code in a way, right?
In what way? In what way? How does that work?
Okay. So growing up, I was a big Nintendo kid, and for a while there was this device, and it was kind of controversial at the time because some people thought it was cheating and, you know, you weren't learning the true skills of gaming. There's this device called the Game Genie, which you'd put on the cartridge.
Yes, I remember that.
Put it in your system, and they would sell code books for specific games. You do remember that? Yeah. And you'd type the codes in. It wasn't going to win the game for you, but it was going to give you a huge advantage to doing so. And seeing as I kept dying playing these Nintendo games, they stopped becoming fun. So I'm like, what's a little cheat code going to do?
Yeah.
I guess, well, I'll say it like this. If you're contemplating a big decision like a career change or a move or a marriage, and you're feeling unsure, and even you don't know what your intuition's trying to tell you, if you journey on these specific intentions, you'll pretty much get the answers you need. And it won't be spelled out to you. Like, the game will not win itself, but you will get those cheat codes. And what I mean is that, and I'm sure you can relate to this in your work, is that spirit loves to communicate in symbols.
Yes.
Right? Like, we're not going to give you the answer, but we're going to give you a little code book to help you find the answer. And when you do find the answer, it's going to absolutely blow your friggin' mind. And I've had that happen several times, still to continue, I'm sure.
So I'm just curious, because I need to know more about this. When you go into the journeying and you get these cheat codes, who and where, like, what is the source of that guidance, or where is that guidance coming from? Is it the higher self? Is it spirit animals? Is it totems? Is it deities? And do you set the intention?
It's a bit of both.
Okay. And then do you set the intention of who you want to get that information from, or the divine decides who's going to come and assist you with that intention?
A little bit of everything, but I'll spell it out for you a little bit more clearly, just to clear things up. So when you're learning to do this in the lower world, you want to connect with what's known as your power animal.
Okay.
And it can be several. And when you, when you are in your spot in nature and you see several animals and you don't know who your power animal is, you have to ask.
Okay.
Because some are just there.
Okay.
And some might just be hanging out and you'll need them on another journey, but not this one per se.
Makes sense. So, don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no worries. I could go deeper on this, but for time, I don't think I'll go all in on it today. But sometimes power animals you interact with in the spirit realm, they will manifest in the 3D later on. And when I started to interact with my spirit animal and was conscious of it, my main one, I think it was either after I started doing shamanic journeying or even yoga nidra around that time. But one example I'll give is I'm not very fond of spiders. Okay. Yeah, given by the look on your face, neither are you.
I'm not.
I interacted with one in the spirit world, in the lower world last summer. And it had a very specific purpose. It wasn't there to scare me or didn't have anything to do with the shadow self. But it was actually very positive. And when you're on these journeys, Googling or going to your favorite spirit animal website is like your best friend because it can make so much sense out of so many things.
Okay.
And I found out the spider had a positive meaning. And then guess what? About this time last year, I started seeing them when I was supposed to see them or when I was supposed to take action. But this is funny. I don't mind the small, tiny spiders. Like I only get sketched out by the really large ones and the hairy ones and all that. So whenever this thing appeared, it would be a little tiny one scurrying around and it wasn't, you know, it didn't sketch me out. And I would see them on places like I'd stop at a red light and one would be crawling, a tiny one would crawl across the side mirror on my car. And I'm just like, I never see this. That has got to be a message. And then sure enough, it turned out it was.
Yeah. Definitely. There's so many, I'm really fascinated about this because there are some parallels between this and mediumship, different modalities, definitely, but there's definitely some similarities. So this, I just find this absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. How often should one do a journeying? Or is this something that's reserved for like a specific, I know there's an intention, but I would think that a person wouldn't want to be doing this just as a novelty. There's got to be a purpose behind this. How often would one do this?
Yeah. Ideally, you could do it as much as you want. I've never come across any research that says a person burned out mentally because they did it too much. Or I'll say it like this. It's like, it's similar to meditation, but maybe more intense, but I'll liken it to psychedelics. Like psychedelics can be very healing and very good for you and very profound, but you should probably only do them when you need to do them and do certain doses. And I might liken that to shamanic journeying. You should probably only do it when you really need to do it and not use it as a crutch. Because I think the same thing can happen in the psychic world as well, where, hey, it's good to get a reading, it's good to get guidance, but you can't base every single decision in your life on it.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I always tell clients, you know, when they ask me, how often should I come for a reading? I said, not less than every 6 months, not less than 6 months. You still got to take what you learn, apply it, and live your life. It's a tool. It's not the crutch.
Yeah, and I'll say this, you'll agree with me on this. We may have even talked about it on my show before, but if someone with any spiritual modality is constantly trying to come back for more on a regular basis, that's a major red flag.
Definitely. Definitely a major red flag. And I really like how this core shamanism, it's about that inner healing. And when you're able to heal yourself, you can then use these beautiful gifts and these beautiful modalities to help bring healing to other people. So it really is all about healing.
It is.
So before we started recording, I just want to touch on something here. You had said that there is some controversy between shamanism and then shamanism with the First Nations. Am I correct on that? Did I state that properly? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. We also touched upon it a little while ago, talking about the difference between the terms shaman and shamanic practitioner. I was not aware of this until this came up in some of my classes. And I found out, and my teacher said this, she said, yeah, like, even if you go down this path and do amazing work, some people are going to hate on you. And what I've learned is that, because to me, like, we're no stranger to this through ancient and modern history, that the relations between our ancestors and the First Nations people is not good for the most part. And I want to believe those fences are slowly starting to be mended, especially here in this country, but it's hard for me to say for sure. The way I look at shamanic practice or core shamanism is that it's a way to heal all who want it and need it. Okay. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you come from. I look at it as a way to maybe bridge the gap of the relations between, you know, figuratively speaking, the white man and the First Nations. I look at it as a bridge to connect the two together. However, some, from what I've heard, I haven't experienced this myself, but I'm sure I will one day, is that they look at it as a chasm to divide. Well, you shouldn't be doing this. These were our practices. One of your people took this and profited from it. We don't like what you do. And I can't get into too many details here, but one of my pupils gained employment sometime last year, late 2021, and her boss is a member of the First Nations. I don't remember which tribe. And when he found out she was doing these courses, he had a major problem with it, allegedly. Now, I've been told he has a major problem with a lot of things to begin with.
Okay.
So it just kind of goes with his personality. And the response my teacher gave was, well, if he doesn't like what I'm doing, give him my number. Tell him to call me. This exchange happened. No phone call ever took place.
Okay.
So take what you will from that. And that's really all I could get into on that matter.
Fair enough. And, you know, there's people, I guess it's really like any other modality or religion. People take what resonates with them and they apply it to their life. So we see variations in many different spiritual practices, faith, et cetera. It's not necessarily that there is an ill intent towards another, but yet I think really the whole spiritual journey for individuals and for the collective is a discovery of self and bringing ourselves back to that true nature that resides within, that we are these spiritual beings having this human experience, and that the two worlds, the seen and the unseen, we want to bridge the gap so that there is no divide. And it really does enhance lives. And it's so transformative. I mean, just listening to your story, Phil, it's changed drastically in the last 10 years for you, for the better.
Mm-hmm. When I went to that trade school for the music business education, I was completely entering a world of ego and doing it for egoic reasons. And it led me to some dead ends. And then what got me out of those dead ends? Going down the heart path and listening to spirit. And yes, that is the name of the Jeff Nixa book, Navigating the Heart Path. I believe it's give or take. That's the loose title.
Okay. We'll find it. And if I can find it online, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. So Phil, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about
tell the listeners a little bit about where
things are headed for you, the podcast, what you've got going on, and how they can get in touch with you?
Okay. So before I get to the podcast, with my work, you said this in my intro that I'm still in a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
And I need to be for a little while I grow this organically. So I'm trained in these modalities. I'm at level 2 Reiki, going for my master's probably sometime in 2023. And this is a whole other thing. And I'll get into this more on my show because it's going to be a major topic and it revolves around one of my guests. But I am being heavily drawn and called to the world of spiritual hypnotherapy.
Okay.
And I feel like it's the glue and the main puzzle piece that's going to make me transcend the 9-to-5 and then start striking out on my own with the spiritual healing. And I was talking with my shamanic teacher about this recently, about blending the two together. And she said, yeah, it's a great idea and there's ways you can do it. So that's what I'm working on in terms of my spiritual work. And that's still going to take a bit of time. In the meantime, in my area, I'm building up a nice community of like-minded people. And this fall, I'm going to start practicing. And once the practice starts to sharpen, we'll see where things go from there. Now, in terms of the show, this timing of appearing on your show is tremendous because by the time this posts, my season premiere will be available for Unexplained Incorporated. I used to do week to week for just over 2 years. I got a little burnt out on it, had to take a break over spring and summer. Now I'm back in a seasonal format with very targeted episodes and discussions. And for this season, at least, an overall theme tying it all together, which will be revealed in the final episode in December. So each season is 12 episodes. Episode 1, Smashing Through the Boundaries, which was a solo monologue of just myself. It is available now. And before I mention where and how you can listen, I just want to give a quick note that I'm proud of all my work, but this might be the most proud of an episode I've done, especially mostly by myself, that I've done in the 2.5 year run of the show. And I get very raw. I get very vulnerable and quite emotional at parts of it. And maybe not for some who know me well, but some will see a different side of me and may even shock some people in this season premiere. And I think, Courtney, you'll be included in that when you get around to checking it out. So how you can listen, I'm available on iTunes, Spotify, pretty much all the major podcasting platforms. I think Google Play is in there as well. And I also have a player embedded on my website, thephantomhub.com. And you can reach the show on Facebook, Twitter. My handle is at PhantomPhil3. But Instagram is where we're most active. Unexplained Incorporated has an Instagram page, but most of the updates come to my own Instagram page at PhantomPhilUnexplained.
I am so excited to check out the new shows on your podcast. It's a great show, everybody. You got to check it out. Phil, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm going to love to have you back because I feel like we've just skimmed the surface of this and I really want to even pick your brain more because this is so, it's so, I don't know what it is within me, but there's something about shamanism that really speaks to me. And for myself, I always have a little bit of hesitancy with respect to talking to people and learning more about, I'll say, areas of spirituality that I'm not personally familiar with, because I know there's a lot of people that claim to be an expert, claim to have knowledge, and they don't have a leg to stand on. And you've been very candid and authentic and saying this information I share is based on the schooling that I've done, the training that I've done, and the studying I've done myself. And you don't claim to be something that you're not. And that's what resonates. And that's why I love having individuals like you on the show and sharing your voice. So thank you so much for coming back or having you on the show. And you are welcome back anytime, Phil.
That's great to hear. And this is a lot of fun for me to talk about as well. And you're right. We really just barely scratched the surface. And that's kind of where I'm at in my own journey on this as well. And just before we leave, quick note, you, Courtney, are going to be on this new season of Unexplained in November. And yes, our general topic is going to be the afterlife, near-death experiences, and remote viewing. I just want to say this before we wrap. One of the modalities in core shamanism is psychopomp, and that deals with crossing souls over. And I'm pretty sure you and I are going to get into that one a little deeper when you come on Unexplained in a couple of months.
Psychopomp.
Pomp. P-O-M-P.
Okay. I've not heard of that term. I have heard of crossing souls over through the practice of shamanism. I'm so excited to be on your show. We've got lots to talk about, mm-hmm. and I look forward to it. Thank you again for being on the show, Phil. I really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of The Connected Spirit. If you did, please leave me a review and a rating wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you do feel called to share this with your friends, thank you so much for tagging me on Instagram at Medium Courtney Dawson. It really helps to get the word out about this podcast so we can help more people just like you. If you're interested in a private reading or attending any one of my mentoring classes, workshops, or events, you can go to mediumcourtneydawson.com or check me out on Instagram at Medium Courtney Dawson. Have a great day, guys.